There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, Mr. J. Luda, back on the pod. You're before we get started, you're kind of coming off a little poker heater right now, aren't you? You shipped an online tournament, playing well in person. Obviously, all our friends know you as a DraftKings guy, but you're kind of rolling on a little heater poker-wise right now, eh?
Hey, Hagel, what's going on? Yeah, it's been nice, a little poker heater, and also ran pretty hot in the March Madness bracket to have a nice little score. So it's been a good couple weeks for me, and now it's Masters week. It's one of the best weeks of the year, not just obviously golf-wise, it's probably the best, but sports-wise, I think, too, it's just one of the best weeks of the year with the March Madness championship, and now we get the Masters, so... Let's roll into it.
Yeah, so let's talk. Well, first and foremost, for anybody that doesn't know already, Jared's kind of our gambling DraftKings expert. He's been on the pod a couple of times already, and every year we do a little Masters preview. We put together some DraftKings lineups, and so let's just start with this, Jared. Like, you know, who are kind of the maybe the top guys that you're looking at? Obviously, you know, Hebert, top debutante last year. There's been a lot of talk on him this year. You got Scotty, who's obviously the odds-on favorite, but quite frankly hasn't been playing his best probably this year, which is kind of funny to say because everybody just expects him to win a bunch of tournaments, but, like, still playing all right, but probably not up to, you know, his standards. And there's a whole other mix of guys, and you got the LIV people as well. High level, kind of what are you looking at this year? Who do you like, you know, going into the field? There's the Rory talk. Just kind of walk me through, you know, what are your hot topics for the year?
Yeah, so obviously with, you know, being a full field with all the, or not all, but a lot of the LIV guys here, there's a little, you know, added drama. And it's just so fun when these guys all get together and we actually get to see, like, you know, the best field in golf or one of them. It's tricky, right? Because there is a lot of talk about those guys at the top, but you're getting, you know, maybe a slightly out of form Scheffler, but I think that's a little overrated talk. You're probably getting Rory and for sure some of the best form of his career. Oberg playing well, Morikawa playing well, you know, Bryson and Rahm are the top LIV guys. And then, you know, JT's starting to play a little better. Xander's up there. And Xander, you know, kind of coming off a little bit of an injury. I'm not sure what to think about him, but I think I have my interest on him on DraftKings if we're going to get Xander low owned, just because if people aren't playing him because they think he's rusty or whatever, I want all the Xander. I mean, he played really good with his strokes gained approach last time out. And yeah, I mean, just think, like, Xander, obviously last year, how good he was. He won two majors. Everyone wanted to play him every week. He came in 30% almost every week. And now what? There's, like, no Xander talk this week. What are we going to get him, like, 5%? To me, that's really silly. And at a cheaper price tag. He's below 10K. He was, like, never below 10K last year. So, or very rarely. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, we'll obviously get into the DraftKings. Before we do, obviously a big part of, you know, not only DraftKings, but probably for people, you know, whether they're playing their office pools or betting in general, is kind of call it course conditions and the weather as well. You know, for those maybe kind of new to understanding how the weather draw works, is just generally speaking, you know, if you play, have a Thursday morning tee time, you're going to have a Friday afternoon tee time and vice versa. So if you have a Friday afternoon tee time, or sorry, Thursday afternoon tea time, you're going to have a Friday morning tea time. And you hear pros kind of talk about the weather draw a lot because you never know, like, you know, maybe the guys that draw the Thursday morning, Friday afternoon, the wind is, you know, it's super cold on Thursday and then the wind blows on Friday, or it's not as bad, you know, for the guys going off at the opposite times. Anything that you're looking at from a course or weather-wise this week, or are we pretty stamped out? I took a look at everything and nothing really jumped out to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like we're going to have good weather this week. I don't see an advantage on either wave. It's kind of funny because there has been talk in the last month or so about there being an edge in some of these tournaments with there being a wave advantage. I can't remember. It was one of the Florida ones, maybe the Valspar. Doesn't matter, but like there was talk about, oh, there's a clear advantage. It's going to be way harder, like Friday afternoon, you know, play the guys that get out early on Friday. And it literally flip-flopped. It was supposed to be harder that way, but the other way was harder. So who knows with weather? All I know is it's going to be decent this week. Typically, the guys out earlier, I mean, you think about it, obviously the course plays a little easier when you're first out there on Thursday. You know, there's no spike marks. The greens are perfect. You know, typically it plays a little easier in the mornings. But yeah, we're looking at nice weather, so I'm not too concerned about any of that. They did get a bunch of trees knocked down out there from
the hurricane.
Yeah, made it up there, and I guess a ton of trees were knocked down on property, but they cleaned it up. I know Michael Kim was talking about it. You can't even tell. It's pristine, and it was hilarious. I saw Rom talking about, he wouldn't say who, I should try to find it on social media, but he said that someone told him that they're going to try to take it over the clubhouse or the cabins on 10 on the right side. Like you can fade it really high over those. And he didn't say who told him that or if he's going to try it, but that's because those, a lot of the trees on 10 are gone now. So that's actually an option. And so we're looking at maybe Rory trying that, Bryson trying that, Rom, like literally probably like five guys in the field. But that's pretty funny. So we'll see what happens on 10 this year if anyone tries that.
I guess it was Bryson. I imagine since they're both on LIV, you know, he's probably the guy that would try it, would probably tell him. Adam Scott described it as the course, like, or just Augusta in general, looks a little bit more thinned out. And Faldo said that when you're sitting behind 18 green, you can now see 5T, which you've never been able to see before due to some trees being out of there. So I don't think it's going to affect much like playability. I mean, maybe a couple of shots here and there. But I do think it's going to look a little bit different on TV, especially if you can see kind of more fans in between holes where you haven't been able to before. I think Faldo was quoted saying like, you might just see a little more color on screen because you're going to see a lot more patrons. So getting back to like betting, you know, nothing like weather advantage wise, you know, nothing really new kind of with the course. So I think let's just get into, maybe let's build a couple of DraftKings lineups, answer some people's questions. And then obviously that's going to bleed into, you know, how we might take a look at different office pools, ultimately, you know, who we think is going to win. And then some other kind of Masters trivia. So, one concept that we always, you know, talk about, you've talked about on the pod a lot, is this concept of going like a stars versus scrubs lineup or a balanced lineup. For example, in DraftKings, you pick six players, got to be within the salary, very similar if you ever played DraftKings for football. And a stars versus scrubs would be doing like a Scheffler and maybe like an Hebert, those two as your big horses, and then four kind of really lower owned guys, or balanced, where you're picking a bunch of like middle tier guys, right? For you, what do you think is a better strategy this year? You want to build and start with the stars and scrubs, or are you thinking something a little bit more more balanced?
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because you wanna play two studs at the top, but then you're looking at playing, you know, a couple 6K guys and some low 7K guys. And my gut tells me that the build is probably that's going to be better is like one stud. Like, pick who you think's going to win, whether it's Scheffler, Rory, Åberg, Morikawa, or whatever. Start with them and then go more balanced. I just think the talent in the mid and high sevens and low eights is too good. The pricing is too soft, and because of that, you're able to build a really, really good, Rory or Scheffler, pretty balanced lineup. And I think people will go the stars and scrubs route just because there's like 90 some golfers in the field, and what we can probably cross off 15 of them, 20 of them maybe. And like, so that leaves
Also,
70.
are you crossing off Homa? There's a lot of Homa talk this week because he hasn't made a cut, but he's like basically even money to make the cut, maybe a slight dog now that people are betting it. So I'm curious if he's one of the 15 write-offs this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, right? Because Homa, I think he even top five tier last year, but he's coming off like six missed cuts. There's that Masters tracker that lets you see on the range. He's hit like 250 shots today, I think, which is by far the most out of anyone. And they show like his, all his web of shots, and they were all over the place. Like, I don't know. I just think he can't find it. And so that's worrisome. So I think I'm going to be off him. Yeah, like I said, I just think the talent's too good in the mid sevens and eights to pass up that range. And if you lead with two studs, you don't have enough salary left to get into that range. So I don't like it. And I think people will still do that because what I was going to say is, yeah, so like 95 players, we'll say like 75 have a decent shot at making the cut. But it's top 50 in ties, so you can go stars and scrubby because those guys at the bottom do have a better chance to make the cut than they normally would in a full field event of 150 golfers or so. So you can pull it off, but the thing is like, do those guys in the 6Ks have the upside to sneak into the top 10 if you're gonna win one of these big contests? You probably need that, or at least a top 20. And you can't really say that about too many of those guys down there. So, yeah, I prefer a stud balanced. Just go with who you think's gonna win, and then plug in some of your favorite guys.
All right, well, let's start. Why don't you and I both pick a winner? Because I think we do kind of have different people that we think are going to win. Because a lot of the questions, obviously, people want to go, who's a good, cheap, low-owned guy? Jeff asked, what's your number one criteria or stat this week? And leading into my pick for the Masters this week, I'll go first, by the way. I'm gonna put myself up to go first. I'm going Colin Morikawa. I think for me, the stat that I've been looking at lately is how the past winners have played the par fives, Lude. And I don't have it up in front of me. I'll see if I can find it. But the net of it was, like Scottie Scheffler, when he won, he was like 12 under on the par fives and then was like plus one or two on all the par threes and fours. Hideki, when he won, was like minus nine on all the par fives. I think he was actually plus two or something on the par threes and fours. And Morikawa's stats are some of the best on par fives. I think there was that one year we were at the Waste Management Open together, and he literally eagled all three par fives. And so for me, like I'm looking at guys that can attack par fives, really good ball strikers with their long irons, which obviously both Scheffler and Morikawa are, which I think is why they're probably at the top of our leaderboards. And like I think putting is also a massive thing in Augusta. We've talked about the undulation of the greens, the speed of the greens, and his stroke gain putting rank at the Masters year by year, starting in 2020. He was 59th, 45th, 32nd, 20th, and then last year he was 8th. And so what that tells me is obviously we know history at the Masters means a lot, and these guys that are now starting to get into their fourth, fifth, sixth Masters, having the Masters experience, knowing how the greens play, knowing how to putt on those greens. I think if all those things come together for Morikawa playing those par fives well and putting really good, he's going to be at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday. And he's my pick and he's my star who I want to kind of build my DraftKings lineups around.
Like it. Yeah, you had some good stuff in there. And to add to Morikawa, I think he's got a little chip on his shoulder. He just got a second at API, and he's been getting a lot of heat in the media. I don't know if you've seen some of the stuff they've been saying, or they didn't really like how he acted after his loss. Like, he just kind of blew a tournament and didn't really want to talk to anyone and just left and didn't do an interview. It's whatever. They're making too big a deal out of it and calling them soft and calling golfers soft. It's whatever. I kind of agree with him. They can do whatever they want, but he's been catching some heat, and he's been playing really good. I like all those stats you brought up on him. Obviously, he's one of my favorite. I would say, to answer Jeff's question, to me, I think one stat that sticks out here more than usual is strokes gained around the greens. Like you said, these greens are so undulated and so tough. That's why we see so many debutants struggle here. I think here strokes gained around the greens has been an indicator of who's, always at the top of the leaderboards, because it's so hard to chip around these greens. And an example of that, who is an absolute wizard on the greens and around the greens, but doesn't hit it very well, has been Cam Smith. And I'm not really like a big Cam Smith fan, but it just goes to show you that, like, last year he top fived here and he was hitting it terrible. He was spraying it all over the course. But like, if you know how to work your way around these greens, chipping and putting, you're gonna do a lot better out here than some of these guys who are seeing it for the first time. And there's a ton of creativity. JT talked about it, and he's one of the best at it. You may have a chip that you think is going to do one thing, and you got to play it 10 more feet of break than you normally think. And you got to use your lofted wedges, and I mean, these things, greens are lightning fast. And so I'm looking at guys that I think have past history here. Like you said, you can bank on those guys where they're seeing it for the third, fourth, fifth times. And Morikawa is a great pick because he's been getting better each year, and that's a good trend. But yeah, I like guys that are going to be doing well around these greens. All you have to look up is, their strokes gained around greens on tour, and you can also or find, the webs on Datagolf will show you the player. How good they are around the greens. And so I really like that stat, and I think it's going to be huge this week.
Yeah, I found the averages I was talking about on par five scoring. So it goes all the way back to 2010, and essentially the average for the winner for the week, their par five scoring was 9 under. Their par and 3-4 scoring was 3 under. But just the last 3 years, you had Scheffler 9 under par five scoring, 2 under 3 and 4s. Jon Rahm 10 under. He was also 2 under on 3 and 4s. Scottie Scheffler again 8 under par five. -2 on par 3 and 4 scoring. So it just goes to show you, like, and you go back from there, Hideki 11 under, Dustin Johnson 11 under, Patrick Reed 13 under. Like, it's guys that can attack par fives and do really well there. That's the trend that I'm looking at going into this week as I start to build the rest of my lineup. So before I look at those guys, who's your stud that you're going to pick, and who are you picking to win this week?
Oh man, I've been flip-flopping back and forth. Honestly, for me, it's between three guys, and it's going to be kind of chalky, but it's a tournament and a course where the cream seems to rise to the top. And we've seen Scheffler there, we've seen Rory make runs there, Morikawa's been there. For me, I think it's going to be one of those three guys. Now, you have to decide which one. If you're going from a DraftKings perspective, Morikawa is the cheapest out of the three. But he worries me a little bit just because of the nerves. And I don't know, just a couple times on tour, he's been in contention or been in first, and he doesn't necessarily play that well with the lead. And so that worries me a little bit with him. And also, I kind of worry too that he has a chip on his shoulder, but if he's been distracted this week kind of with the media and stuff. I don't know. He looked kind of annoyed when they were asking him questions today about that. That's a little worrisome. So for me, the winner or who I'm going to be starting my lineups with is either going to be Shefty or Rory. I don't know. I mean, me and you, we met Scheffler this year and got a picture with him. So it's kind of hard for me not to pick him. I feel like it's kind of meant to be. We met Scheffler out at Scottsdale at Nobu one night this last year or during the waste management. So that was pretty sweet. But gosh, I don't know. Honestly, I'm going to play both. I'm going to play lineups with both. If I have to pick one on the spot right now, I think it's going to be Rory's time to put on the green jacket.
Wow.
I was looking at some.
I think we said that last year too, and I think he barely made the cut, or maybe he even missed the cut.
Yeah, but he came back and played really well. I'm looking. Yeah, so 2022, he got second.
The weather was really shitty last year.
Yeah.
Really shitty.
I don't know. To me, here's the thing about Rory. I mean, I know you're not really a big fan of Rory. I've always been a pretty big fan, but this is what I'll say about Rory. I mean, he's already won twice this year. He won at Pebble. He won at the Players. He won at the Players, which is a course where you don't really need to utilize your driver, which is obviously his best weapon. He like led the field in strokes gained approach, been absolutely striping it. I just feel like this course is kind of made for Rory, the way it's set up and how good he is off the tee. I mean, there was a stretch there from 2014 to 2020 where he had like seven straight top tens. And, you know, just so obviously he knows the course really well. And I think for Rory, he knows the clock is ticking, right? He's about to turn 36. He's going to start losing distance and, you know, his biggest weapon a little bit as he approaches 40. He knows the time is now. Now, can he handle the pressure and get it done? I think in the back of his mind, it's bothered him a little bit that he choked it away back a long time ago when he had like a big lead on the back nine and choked it on Sunday. But I just feel like he's matured and he's ready for it now. And I think he can handle it. And like I said, his game has arguably never been better. And I think just mentally he's in a good headspace. And, I would just be really shocked if he wasn't in contention Sunday. I mean, his strokes gained approach stats this year and all his stats really are just insane. They're kind of mirroring what Scheffler's looked like last year. Not quite to that level, but, you know, are we going to get the Shefty of last year? He's been a little rusty to start this year, so I lean Rory if I have to choose head-to-head.
Well, obviously that answers Cole's question of, is it Rory time? And we've already answered Jordan's question of does past history at the Masters matter? Because we all know that it does. Yeah. I mean, literally the only guy that has kind of ixnayed that is Hebert last year. And I consider
crazy.
That an anomaly, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
just absolutely wild
second,
what he did.
Second as a debutant to Scheffler playing the best golf in the world, arguably, definitely, you know, was there and could have beat him. He went in the water in the back nine and you know, ended up losing it. But, yeah, I mean, he could be in contention too. Like I said, those top golfers right now are just playing so well. And I think, you know, it's a special week. Obviously, the Masters prep, it's just different, right? Those guys, they're all locked in. I mean, it's the Masters, man. It's just different. So, you know, they're so locked in and ready to go. And they know that they only get one chance each year and you know, buckle up. Here we go.
So I'm going to read two, you know, I've done a ton of research and stuff all on Twitter, data golf, all these things. And, you kind of have to take some things with a grain of salt, right? Like there's a lot of stats out there, like, five of the last five Masters winners, this, this, and this. It's like, well, you could say five of the last five Masters winners were Scottie Scheffler, Jon Rahm, and whatever. So there's a lot out there, but I found two tweets that I thought were relevant in terms of the stuff that we like to look at. I'm going to read them both to you. So the first is 13 of the last 13 winners of the Masters gained at least 18 total strokes tee to green in the four tournaments before the Masters win. So this checks a couple of boxes. One, pretty big data set, 13 Masters winners, and all 13 of the last Masters winners had this stat. And then how they're playing basically tee to green for the four tournaments leading up to the Masters. I think that's pretty relevant. There's only 14 players in the field this week that are doing that. There's Scottie Scheffler, Corey Connors, Morikawa, Lowry, J.J. Spahn, your guy Rory, Sepp Straka, Aaron Rye, DeChambeau, Lucas Glover, Will Zalatoris, Russell Henley, Robert McIntyre, and Kevin Yu. The second one, seven of the last seven Masters winners were top 30 in the official world golf ranking, finished top 15 in one or both of the last two majors, had a previous major top five, had a top five finish of the season, had a previous top 25 at Augusta National, and then ranked 25 in strokes gained tee to green. Only five golfers meet that requirement. Rory, Kawa, Hideki, Shane Lowry, and Russell Henley. And the three that overlap between the two are Rory, Morikawa, and Shane Lowry. So based on all of those things, all of those golfers, all of those stats, the biggest thing that stood out to me was Shane Lowry. Not a guy that I think a lot of people would consider, a dude that plays well at the Masters. What's your take on Shane? And really what I'm leading you to right now, Lute, is that I'm taking it in every single one of my lineups. If you hit those two metrics and you're up there with Kawa and Rory, and I can get you at a relatively good price on DraftKings and probably in some tier twos, and a lot of like office pools, that's my guy that I'm going with, and somebody I think is going to be pretty low owned.
Yeah, I mean, I like Shane. Again, I think for him, he knows the clock's ticking. He's 38. It's just hard when you reach 40 and older to compete with all these guys who are just bombing it out there in their low 20s. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of – I didn't – I wasn't, like, rushing to put Shane in a bunch of my lineups. But now that you bring that up, he has been playing really well. He got eighth at Valspar, seventh at API, second at Pebble this year. His Masters history is okay. He had a stretch there. He's made five cuts in a row. He got third in the 2022 Masters. So – yeah, I mean, I like him. He is a great short game around the green. I mean, some guys talk about how, his soft hands around greens and how he is such a good chipper and one of the best strokes gained approach on tour. So can he be there on Sunday? Yeah. I like Shane, and that's a good stat. We'll definitely have to fire him up in some.
So my one of the other questions was maybe a guy that's a little bit more lower owned, and I think I found a nugget on a guy. Would you consider 7,600 kind of low, low priced and probably going to be low owned?
No,
I mean, this is like a tier four guy on office pools. So
yeah, I mean. Sure, but I would say maybe under 7K is probably like the cutoff for like cheap punts on DK. But
well, I'm gonna make my. Who am I gonna say? Who am I gonna say?
You're gonna say Straka.
Yeah, is he gonna be chalky? Because I'm adding Straka into my lineup based on a couple things.
I think he'll be popular, but as long as your entire lineup isn't chalky, you're fine, right? So just be aware of that. For example, let me pull up some ownership predictions right now.
Yeah, and he had – so that first stat that I read off on the last 13 of 13 that were strokes tee to green in their four Masters before, he was on that list. He's also the last 10 Masters champions that averaged 2.17 strokes gained per round leading up to their wins. He's on that list with Morikawa, Rory Scheffler, Henley, JT, Lowry, our guy, Sergio, Bryson, Neiman, Cantlay, Spahn, and Rahm. Straka is the last player on that list. And I want to leave you with this too. He won at the Amex. He's had four top 10s, seven top 15s, seventh in strokes gained total, sixth in strokes gained tee degree, fifth in strokes gained approach, second in greens and reg, and second in proximity to the hole.
Yeah, I mean, he's just absolutely been striping it. His strokes gained approach stats are, I think, the best on tour this year. It's been really impressive. Yeah, and last year was his best. He got 16th at the Masters. That was his best performance. So coming in with better form this year, I could see him competing. But the thing with him, though, he's not the best around the greens. But like you said, he's been really hot this year. He's second in greens and regulation, second in proximity. So if he's out there throwing darts, he's going to be there. But if he starts missing a couple greens, it's a little tougher for him to get up and down, I think, around these tough Augusta greens. So, yeah, I like him. I think he's going to be pretty popular. I'm probably 15-ish, 20%. Maybe not 20, but 15-ish percent owned in most DK contests. But like I said, as long as you have a couple low-owned guys on your lineup, you're fine. So, yeah, I like some Straka.
So I've built half my team with Kawa, Lowry, and Straka. Let's hear from you. Mikhail wants to know top amateur for the year, and people want some kind of low-owned guys. Right now I'm sitting at an average remaining player of, call it, 7,700. Who are some low-owned guys under 7K that we like this year, and then who for you is your top am?
Yeah, so let's take a look at some cheap guys down here. You know, because it's interesting. We got a couple debutants down here that I think are good golfers, but it's like, how are they going to fare their first time seeing Augusta? The two that stick out to me for debutants are McNealy and Gracerman. They're both young. They both bomb the ball, and they're both good around the greens. McNealy specifically is one of the best putters on tour. And so, you know, do I think those guys can potentially be in the mix come Sunday? Probably not, but can they squeak in with a top 20? I think so. I mean, both of them hit it really far and score well on the par fives. Both are good putters and good around the greens. And their weakness is driving accuracy. And you don't really need that. It's not like a huge, huge indicator at Augusta, just because it's not that penal. There's what, like, you know, the rough isn't that bad there unless you find some spots deep around after, you know, you go over on some greens or you miss on a side or whatever, it can get kind of
bad. It tells you all you need to know that like a Rory and a DeChambeau maybe haven't won yet, and like everybody knows Scheffler's main strength and Hideki's main strength are ball striking, right? Like it's a ball striker's golf course, and you got to know where to play on the green. So totally agree with you as it pertains to, you know, maybe driver being advantage at Augusta. Ever since Bryson said it was like a par 67 or whatever it was, Augusta has shut him up pretty quick. So goes to tell you all you need to know.
Yeah, so you know, I think they're going to come in kind of low-owned. Some other low-owned guys down here that I think could be decent are like, well, let me see here. I'm not really sure. It also depends on the ownership on which contests you're going to be playing. For example, in like the single entry stuff, the top guys are like the names you've been hearing a lot of, the Rorys, the Schefflers, the Straka, Corey Connors, Henleys. They're all going to come in higher owned in single entry stuff just because people get one entry in that. So, you know, they want to play who they think are the best guys. Whereas in these big where you can fire 100 lineups if you want to. Obviously, people diversify when they do that, so then you're going to get them ownership a little more spread out. I think
has Boog's played in the Masters before, right?
Yeah, Boog's been interesting, Berger, because always been one of our boys, but you know, had some injuries, fell off for a while, game was completely gone, but recently had a resurgence, said he actually feels 100%, and he's been playing well. I mean, this year he got second at Waste, has a couple other top 20s. Never really fared too well at Augusta, just because I just don't think it suits his eye that well off the tee, and maybe, you know, tends to struggle on and around the greens a little bit. But that being said, he did get 10th as a debutant in 2016. So, yeah, I mean, he's also seen the course for the sixth time. So I don't mind some Berger down there. Keegan Bradley is someone who's seen the course a bunch. And, I mean, how can you not root for our Ryder Cup captain? Mr. Keegan Bradley has some like T20s here, coming in with pretty good form. He got fifth at API. He just won the BMW last August. I like Keegan. I mean, he's another guy, you know, he's approaching 40. He's got to know that the clock is ticking too. Do I think he can win here? No, but when you're paying 7K for these golfers at the bottom here and 6Ks, I think you need like a top 20 out of them. So I could see Keegan getting that. What about your boy Benny on? I know you like some Benny.
I just don't think he's been playing all that great. At least not up to his potential. I think he's missed six out of 10 or something this year. He just hasn't really broken through yet. I think he can. I think he will. But like Augusta's not the place where you take some of these guys to maybe, you know, come through or break through, right? Like they're big time. Like, you know, even a guy like Tommy Fleetwood, who's still looking for that kind of really big win. I just don't think Augusta's the place that you can do that. Like there's other majors where you might be able to do that, but it just never feels like Augusta is the spot that, you know, like you look at Hebert last year, like that could have been his big signature win. And it's just really hard to do that at Augusta. So,
yeah, a couple other cheap guys down here that I think are okay looks are like, you know, we see Denny McCarthy down here at 6,500. I mean, if Denny is on the surface of the green, it's almost for sure going to go in. I mean, the guy is literally the best putter maybe ever, on the PGA Tour. Last year as a debutant, made the cut, got 45th. I think he literally led the field in strokes gained putting. Can Denny, you know, be there in contention on Sunday? Probably not, but he's 6,500. You know, it's a little cheap for him. Another guy down there that I think's an okay look is JT Poston. Your boy, he's been working with – who's he been working with on his short game? Short game chef.
Oh, Joe Mayo, or is it Parker?
I can't remember. I thought I remembered you said he'd recently been working with someone, but he's a freaking wizard around the greens. So I do like a little Poston. He's gotten T30 the last 2 years here. So would I be surprised if he snuck in T20? No, I like that as a look. And then, a couple other guys down here. I kind of like some of these younger guys too, that I think have potential. Dunlop, we've seen him win on Dunlap's won on tour a few times already, maybe just once, but the dude just literally can't keep it on the map off the tee. But like I said, it's a little, that's okay here. Missed the cut last year pretty bad.
I know he's not in the 7Ks, but what do you think about Cantlay? A lot of talk about Cantlay this week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never really been a big Cantlay fan. I mean, he is underpriced on DraftKings. He's 8,700. He should probably be in the nines. He's definitely going to be one of the chalkier owned guys. So just be aware of it if you're clicking him in a lineup. Like, you probably don't want to lead him. You probably don't want to pair him with Scheffler or Rory. That combo is just going to be super popular.
Yeah, I want you to listen
But
to
yeah.
this lineup that I just filled out. So it's Morikawa, Cantlay, Shane Lowry, Corey Connors, Sepp Straka, Denny McCarthy.
I'm clicking that in now. Yeah, so that's a good lineup. I like it. This is a lineup that would be okay to put in something that's like a higher buy-in single entry that's, only has like 20, 30, 40, 50 people because it can win that. But like, the ownership's going to be pretty high on all these guys. Like, if you put this in the $100 Millie contest, you can't win. You can't win because it's just way. It's gonna be way too popular, guys, and it's 100% salary used, so it could even be duplicated. But yeah, it's a good lineup. Do I think it can win, a massive contest? Probably not. But like I said, just if you want, we can. We can throw that in something decent and or a bigger buy-in and maybe ship something. But yeah. Well, you just made it right there. That's perfect because you added some guys that I liked, and so yeah, I'll throw that in. I'll throw that in something for the listener for the pod, and maybe we'll bink something.
Yeah, the other one that I had was I basically just replaced it was Berger, Cantlay, Lowry, McNealy, Morikawa, Straka. So
I like TV2.
it's basically Connors and McCarthy versus McNealy and Berger.
Yeah, that's a close 2v2. Yeah, and in these instances too, when you guys build lineups, if you can't decide and you have a really close 2v2, I would say just put that other lineup in a different contest or something, or even the same one, but I prefer the single entry contest. So,
People are asking a lot about Willy Zalatoris. Obviously, a guy that's like played really well here before and is kind of making a little bit of a comeback. Obviously, had his back injury, but I think a young guy that people really know his name and like want to root for him. Any takes on Big Willy style this year?
Yeah, man, I really like Willie Z. He had some back problems, and that's like the worst thing that can happen if you're a golfer. Yeah, I like him. He likes it as Augusta. Another guy, he got second here as a debutant. He pulled a Oberg and got second, and then he went sixth and then ninth in his three appearances. So, three top tens. Yeah, I mean, do I think his game is where he, would hope it would be? Not really. Looking at this year, it looks like he got 12th at the American Express, and he got like 20. Yeah, he's got a few top 20s this year, but nothing that sticks out for me. But then again, he's what, in the mid eights? That's what I was saying before. Like, those guys in the mid sevens and low eights, those guys can like have a lot of those guys have a good
Yeah, he's
shot
eight point three.
a potential to win the tournament or, be in contention Sunday. And that's why I like that range quite a bit, because you can't really say that about a lot of those guys below 7K. So, yeah, I've always been a big Will Zalatoris fan. He's almost 29. So, he's reaching his golf peak, I would say, which usually happens around 28, 27, 28, 29, 30 in there. And so I think we have yet to see the best of him. I hope that he gets back to where he was, a couple years ago, because he was like top 10 there for a little while, and I thought it was only a matter of time before he'd win a major. But then he had some bad injuries. So Yeah, I like Willie Z. Will I be playing him this week? Yeah. We'll see. I haven't built my lineups yet, but he's definitely in consideration.
All right, I want to round out our gambling. Obviously, we've got a bunch of guys that we've talked about for DraftKings. Do you do any of the office pool stuff? You know, with the different tiers, like kind of 1 through 6. Obviously, they all vary a little bit, but you know, that's one of the more
It's
popular models that people put money into. So I'm curious your take on them.
funny. Every year I have like 10 of my friends text me and say, can you help me do this office pool or help me pick these guys or whatever. I'll just say this. It really matters how big the pool is, right? Like I had This is pretty funny. My neighbor today, who doesn't know anything about golf, saw me outside, and he's like, "Hey, will you take a look at this for me?" So I take a look at it. It's an office pool thing. So I started cracking up, and I'm like, "How many people you got to beat in this thing?" He's like, "Oh, it's just me and my wife and a couple other people, close family." He's like, "There's gonna be 10 people max," and I'm like, "Oh, this will be easy. I just pick." I picked the chalk and the best guys in every one. Obviously, if it's a tiered one, you can only pick one of Rory or Scheffler or whatever. But if it's a small pool, you can get away with picking, the chalk or the best guys in each tier. If it's a massive pool with 100 or 1,000 people or whatever, you got to go out on a limb and pick some guys that no one's going to pick, that's not on anyone's radar. I guess Lowry could be a decent look. I don't think he's going to be necessarily on a lot of office pool picks, I would say. So it really just depends. And obviously all those office pools do it a little different with who's in what tier or whatever. I will say this. I started dabbling on some Splash Sports. It's this cool app. They have a lot of cool contests. I did a March Madness Survivor pool on there. That was sweet for the first time. I got to each day you had to pick a team, not each round. Each day you had to pick a team to advance on. And so I had to plan it all out. I started with 20 entries. It was a 10,000 person pool and if you were the solo entry at the end, you won $1 million. Now, I knew for a fact that it was almost never going to get to the end with, a solo winner, especially this year when it was so chalky, like all the one seeds were making it far. There weren't that many upsets or whatever. But you really had to plan it out and be careful with it because you had to pick 10, 11 teams throughout the whole tournament or whatever it was. So if you got to the end and had no one left to pick, you were out. I started with 20 entries and I got really lucky. I had one left at the end and there were 75 entries left out of about 10,000. And we all chopped up about 14K, so that was pretty sweet.
That is pretty sweet. What's that have to do
But
with
yeah.
golf pools?
So now I was looking on there today. They got a cool yeah. Into my story, they got a cool they got a cool contest on there now. So what you do is you pick some golfers, and their score is literally how they end up each round. Or so for example, it's
Oh, so
whatever
you'll pick
team is the
four
most,
golfers.
whichever guy, whatever team's the most under par, right? So you have to pick. No, I think you have to pick like six golfers or something, and like one of the scores doesn't count. But no, it's a cool contest. It's like a $100 entry, and they have cheaper ones too, anywhere from like 5, 10, 20 bucks or whatever. But it's a cool contest. I was just looking at it. Oh, it's a cool thing they're running. Your boy, John Daly's the face of it.
Sick.
He's
It's on
like
our intro.
running the contest, and if they're picking someone, they're doing some random drawings in the contest, and whoever they draw gets to play a round of golf with JD.
That'd be sick.
So I like that. But yeah, it's a cool contest.
We
You guys check it out.
gotta answer Mikhail's question. Who's the top AM? There's only five this year. I mean, it's gotta be the kid from Arizona State, right?
But Ballesteros,
Yeah.
Spaniard, yeah. I mean, he's the best in the field. I think there's, like you said, there's only five. For me, odds wise, I didn't really look at none of them caught my eye. I mean, in past years, we've got Clanton and Sargent at like 8 or 10 to 1 or something, and it was just a fist pump bet. This year, I think the books have Ballesteros at like 2 to 1, or I've seen some even better. So I think he's gonna win
His
low AM, and
odds of making the cut are even odds right now, which is better than Max Homa, by the way.
so no, I didn't see any low AM odds that I liked. Honestly, I was pretty disappointed this year on Monday. So I do a lot of my betting on Monday morning. Not a lot stuck out to me. I mean, if you got some early prices, there were some decent prices on a bunch of guys to T20. I know I was looking at like Poston and McCarthy, you know, a lot of the guys that I listed, you could get good odds on them. Now all those odds are long gone. It was funny, two of my biggest bets I made were some to make the cut odds or to miss the cut odds. I'll ask you this. What do you think the books lined Jose Maria Olazabal to miss the cut at? And what would you play it at, Hagel? For those who don't know,
How
for
old is
those
he
that
now?
don't
He's
know,
got to be, is he at 60?
he's almost 60, yeah.
To make the cut, he was probably plus, since you're asking, I'm going to guess plus 2,000. And I'd say that I'd bet it at plus 5,000.
Yeah, so I run a model on Datagolf and tweak it a little bit to my liking or whatever. But DraftKings opened Olazabal -750 to miss the cut, which implies about 88% or so that he's going to miss. But my model had him at like -6,000 to miss the cut. Which would mean -750 is a really damn good bet. The only problem with that is you got to lay a lot of money
Yeah, to even make any money. Man,
so
750, that's kind of
since
ridiculous.
then
That must have
on
been an error. I would have guessed closer to your 6,000 number. Yeah, would I guess
well it was
2,000?
funny yeah it was funny because on FanDuel he was -8,000 to miss the cut. And on DraftKings, he opened at -750. It's since been bet. It's like -1,500 now. But just funny. It's just a one that stood out to me and was pretty funny for betting purposes. But yeah, so nothing on low AM. Real quick, I think Riley wanted a shout out on a guy that I like at like 50 to 1 or worse or longer.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna throw.
I have
I'm gonna
my pick.
throw. I'm going to throw out someone here that I think could be a little bit of a dark horse that we didn't haven't mentioned yet on the pod, and it might kind of you might not see coming, but another guy who's 28, 29 years old. He's just won recently in the last year. I think he won twice. Really good around the greens, playing really well. From Scotland, Bobby Mack.
McIntyre, he was kind of high priced, I thought.
Yeah, he's a
I,
little
th I thought he
higher,
was kind of high priced.
but you can still get him. There's books out there now. You can get him 50, 60 to 1. So, you got 12th as a debutant here. The kid's good, man. His all around game is just gotten a lot better. And like I said, he's about to turn 29, so he's probably peaking in his golf skill level. So, shout out, Bobby.
Yeah, mine was Straka. I think he finished or he's around like 70-1. And I already talked about why I liked him, but that was my pick.
Connors too. You can find Connors at like 60-1 and just absolutely striping it this year. Been a stripe show. DJ wanted to know a top debutant. For me, it's probably a Mav. I like McNeely. And then he wanted to know how much would you pay to play Augusta?
Oh, I've had this discussion. The number's 10,000 for me.
I like that. Yeah, I guess.
I think it's just a good number. It's like, I've been there too. And I don't think, like, for people who haven't been, it truly is like, it almost has like an eerie, heavenly, like, feeling to it. It's like you step on and you feel like you're on sacred ground. I haven't really felt that anywhere else. It's just like this feeling that you get there. And so to be able to play it, it's the number one bucket list golf course for me, bar none. And I think it also has to do with the fact that it is so hard to get on. I mean, I've heard, you know, John Ellis, Wyndham's caddy, say that, you know, like, they don't get that type of special treatment, even as guys that are top 10 in the world. Like, if you don't like know a member or what, like, you're not getting on. Like, you're just not. You know, there's a lot of kind of stories and stuff like that, which just makes it even more kind of special, right? You know, maybe compared to some other places that you could probably find a way to get onto.
Yeah, that's a good number. That's probably about right where I'd be at too.
I'll wrap up our pod. I'll wrap up our pod with this. I got into this thread on Twitter. You'll find some good nuggets in here. Then you and I can talk after the pod and put our stuff together. But it was the 15 things that a Masters champion gets. I'll go through these relatively quickly. These are pretty cool. Obviously, there's the green jacket. That started in 1949, so that goes way back. You get an engraving on the Masters trophy. So everyone's seen that Masters trophy. They actually engrave it on the bottom. And then the winner also gets a replica of the trophy to bring home. You get a Masters gold medal, which is actually the oldest tradition of the Masters. Dates back to the original Masters in 1934. And you also get a gold locket. This is something that I think Ben Crenshaw presented and started with, and is supposed to go to the winner's significant other, your wife. You get an invitation to the champions dinner. You also get an honorary membership to Augusta, which is probably, in my opinion, the most coveted, getting the membership. You get a locker in the champions locker room. And since there's been so many winners, winners actually share lockers. So, for example, Scotty shares a locker with 1971 winner Charles Coody and the late Byron Nelson. That's who Scotty shares it with. There is a champions-only range at Augusta. And so past winners have access to a members' range during Masters Week while all the other participants have to use the, you know, practice facility. You get a lifetime invitation to the Masters tournament, obviously. And then the last were just kind of like, you know, money stuff. So you get 100 points for the official world golf ranking, which is the most points. You get $3.6 million prize, 5-year major exemption, 5-year PGA Tour exemption. And then you also get a special tee time. So each year, every past Masters Championship is allowed to bring a guest to play on the Sunday before the Masters. And this year, Scotty brought his mom. So the Sunday before the Masters, all the past champions get a tee time. They can bring out a guest.
That's funny,
which is pretty cool.
Shefty actually texted me, and I was second in line to play, but he had to ask mom.
Mom went. So. Yeah, I didn't realize he got his number at Nobu too. Well, we appreciate your time, Lou. A lot of good nuggets in there. Just to recap, I'm picking Morikawa this year. You're going with Rory this year. I think we agree. You know, maybe it's time for Scheffler to maybe take a step back and give the reins to somebody to win their first green jacket. Some guys that have had experience. Gonna be great viewership this year. Not a lot to worry about with the weather like there was last year. Should show really, really good on TV. And looking forward to one of the best weeks of the year. Also kind of that week that golf feels like it starts to kick off. especially in the state that I live in, Minnesota. So super excited for it, man. And run good in all your tournaments and all your lineups.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on. I hope Rory gets it done. It's time. It's his time.
All right. We'll see. We said it last year. We'll see what we're saying next year.
All right.